Today on Movie Wallahs, we talk about Wuthering Heights and Pillion. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, D as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you.
I have a lot to say about both movies, so be warned.
It's going to be one
is
of those.
Is this a settle in? I'm glad I heated my tea up.
Yes.
This is where we have to listen to Yazdi on 2x speed, right?
Yes.
I do that with a lot of podcasts, by the way.
I do too.
I don't.
1.75.
Is that your speed?
Usually 1.5.
My brain doesn't work that
usually
quickly.
1.75.
I do 1.5.
Yeah.
I won't be too offended if you listen to Movie Wallahs that way, because we can go on sometimes.
Yeah, we do.
But
we can talk.
Especially
to
some of us can.
But no, I just, it's more efficient.
It is.
Because people. There's
You're
be
going
some, like,
on now. It's like, I thought we'd finish the topic and then you paused and you went on.
I want to debate this. Anyway, all right, let's move on then. We have...
No snacks?
Oh, snacks.
More snacks.
What have you bought?
I threw the cover for it. My neighbour, who is a published writer.
Yes.
She's lovely.
Yes.
She did a writing retreat in Mexico City for 3 weeks. And she came back and... we had a little...
Does it have chilies in it?
It does not have chilies in it, but it's got dark chocolate.
Does it have ants in it?
No, it doesn't have ants in it either, but it's dark chocolate, which has mango con chile in it. You know, the dried mango
yes.
with chili in it? It's so
Another
good.
Another mango treat.
Another mango treat. You should try it. It's so good.
The tahine.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to try some.
Take a big piece.
Oh, no, I don't want a big piece. I will
take it.
Anyway, a little cube.
It's really good. I'm now looking to find...
And by the way, when we were talking about chilies and ants, we weren't being stereotypically...
yes, like, racist.
Well, I wasn't going to use the word, but we weren't kind of doing the Mexico stereotypes. It's because we've been to Mexico City together as a group about a year ago now, and we all fell in love with Mexico City.
We love Mexico City.
Mm-hmm. And the food experience and all the flavours, all of, you know, so... That this, was this Mexico
good.
City that she went to?
Yes,
it?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so it is a foodie mecca.
Oh.
Like, if you have not, if you've got any preconceived ideas about Mexico and Mexico City, like, throw them out of the window and just go there, because it's a wonderful
experience.
Wonderful place. The safety issues that people like to talk about with Mexico are completely overblown. It's a very walkable.
Be careful. Yeah, like in any city.
It's just a walkable, friendly.
Yeah.
Vibrant, food-obsessed culture.
Yeah.
And they have some of the best food.
Yes, so you loved it, right?
Absolutely. Can't wait to go back.
Yeah.
And by the way, my neighbor, you can look her up. Her books are available at airport stores everywhere else. Her name is Lauren Fleming.
Lovely.
Yes.
Lauren, thank you very
thank
much.
You,
yes, thank
this
you,
is,
Lauren.
This is excellent.
It's very good.
Delicious.
It's very dark
It's very
chocolate
smooth
too.
As well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Okay, we have to do also our... VOD picks.
Yes.
Let's do our segment. I can't find anything to watch one video on demand.
Yes, do so. You go.
I'll go first. So my recommendation is for a movie that you can't pronounce the name of, but it's a movie that we saw at the Indian Film Festival of Los Angeles a while ago, and that movie will not leave me alone. It's the movie Ullu Joku.
Oh, yes.
U-L-L-O... Z-H-U-K-K-U.
The one about the flood.
The one about the flood.
Oh.
It just dropped on Netflix.
Wow.
And you need to watch it. It's just 2 hours long. This movie will just shake you up. And I'll just read the one-liner for it, which is that grief, illness, and buried secrets converge as a pregnant widow and her mother-in-law grapple with the death of a patriarch amidst a relentless flood. So essentially... There is a flood and this family lives in a very low-lying region of Kerala in India, and they're essentially trapped while they're attending the funeral of the dad, and just all these resentments come out. It's amazing, brilliantly acted. Just watch it. It's excellent.
I can't imagine what they went through filming this movie.
Yeah,
correct.
A large part of its running time is set in a flooded environment, inside a mm-hmm. home, outside a home. The English name for the movie is Undercurrent. Just, I'm not sure if that comes up on Netflix, but
I will check. How
I remember it as Undercurrent.
Yes.
If you go to our website actually and look up the Indian Film Festival of Los Angeles, you will hear us all
reacting
extremely positively at the review of this when we first saw it. It's quite something. Great choice, Yazdi.
Thank you for saying that, because yes, if you do just enter Undercurrent on Netflix, that's the first movie that comes up.
Much, much easier for us Westerners to search for. So Undercurrent, or the correct name is
Ullojoku.
And it's in Malaya?
It's in Malayalam.
Malayalam, yes. Thank you.
It's such a great movie.
Yes.
Okay, Joe. Oh, I was going to say, why don't you go first?
Sure. I've got to remember what I was going to pick. I remember what I was going to pick. So on February 21st, Netflix will add to their streaming pick the wonderful movie from last year's Oscars, which is Triangle of Sadness.
Oh, yeah.
A movie all of us have loved. And if somehow you listen to this podcast and you missed Triangle of Sadness, then just go to your Netflix account right now, look it up, switch it on, watch it. The movie begins, and I think this, I'm just looking at the score here on Rotten Tomatoes, the movie clearly was polarizing. It it begins and goes to places that no movie had gone to. It was just
before.
It was such a weird, bizarre, observant piece of filmmaking.
It's running at its own wavelength. This filmmaker always makes movies which are on a slightly different wavelength. But if you get on that wavelength, it's viciously funny, I think.
It's so good. It's so satirical and holding up a mirror to society and Eat the Rich and all that stuff. And it's done so well. Joe particularly loves this one scene where we've talked about it.
Yes.
Okay, it comes
about halfway through the movie.
No, the beginning one, the one near the beginning.
That one we can talk about. Yeah, I was talking about another one.
So the movie opens with a discussion of gender dynamics between two models. And we often talk about who should pay
for a meal.
You know, in modern dating, right? Like who should be the one that picks up the check? Right, traditionally that's been the guy, but here a debate kind of gets up and running, and it's a really brilliantly written set of arguments from both sides about traditional roles and modern roles. So I was immediately pulled in because I love those philosophical debates. So anyway, it was super fun.
And it's at its heart, it's about class, right? It's about upstairs, downstairs on a ship.
Well, it's class, and there's a little bit of gender thrown in as well.
Oh, absolutely, as well. And the scene I was thinking about is something which happens on the ship.
No.
That scene goes way longer than it needs to, and I just love it. Anyway, the director of this movie is making his first English. He also made the movie Force Majeure, which I adore, original Force Majeure. But he has his first English language movie coming out. This year, it's called The Entertainment System is Down. It stars Keanu Reeves and Kirsten Dunst. And it's about a group of people who are on a plane, and the plane's entertainment system fails, and the people cannot deal with the horror of being bored, and they start doing crazy things. And I can't wait to watch it. Anyway, but people, The Triangle of Sadness is not about sadness, just to be clear. It's a very funny, incisive, sharp movie.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And you will suffer while watching this
movie.
You will suffer, but you will not regret it.
I have to warn you. I suffered. I was in a bad place for much of its running time. So.
Yeah.
Also, it has... Oh, I won't say anything.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, and mine is much more lighthearted, but not so lighthearted. Bridgerton season 4 is out on Netflix. And I binge-watched the first half, which came out, first 4 episodes. Okay. And then the next 4 are due to come, I think, at the end of February. So not long to wait by the time this podcast comes out. And for those of you that don't know, Bridgerton is like an American alternative history Regency romance. It's a TV series. It kind of is under the Shondaland umbrella. And, you know, it kind of deals with like, is it verisimilitude when anachronistic, where, you know, they have orchestra music, but the orchestra music is pop songs. It's beautiful. They've clearly got a huge budget this year. The production is even more, if you can believe that.
It's race blind casting.
It's race blind casting. Yeah. I love this show. I love this show. It's like a really good, sometimes dirty novel that you can curl up with.
It seems squarely in the chick flick category to me.
But
I think it calls way more to you than it does me.
I don't think you've ever watched an episode.
I've never watched an episode. And the bits that I've seen you watching, I'm like not called to either. Yeah. They're all too fluffy and colourful.
But it's great. Love it. Bridgerton season 4 is out. That's it.
All right, so then let's recap. Yazdi, your pick was?
Undercurrent on Netflix.
Mine was Triangle of Sadness on Netflix come February 21st. And Rashmi?
Bridgerton season 4, first half on Netflix.
See, Netflix wins this week. We didn't have a single Netflix last time. All right.
Are we jumping in?
Two movies to review.
Are we going to do Pillion first or Wuthering Heights?
We can do Pillion first and then
Should we get Pillion out the way and then we can...
Sure.
Okay. So I'm just going to read straight from the IMDb pricey here. Hopefully it doesn't contain spoilers, but very briefly, Pillion. Colin, a weedy wallflower letting life pass him by, meets Ray, the impossibly handsome leader of a motorbike club who then takes him on as his submissive. Ray uproots Colin from his dreary suburban life, introducing him to a community of kinky queer bikers, taking all sorts of virginites along the way. But as Colin steps deeper into Ray's world of rules and mysteries, he begins to question whether the life of a 24/7 submissive is for him. Directed by director Harry Lydon, this movie stars...
First-time director.
Oh, is that right?
I think so.
Thank you.
I could be wrong, yes.
So the movie stars,
Alexander Skarsgård,
Harry Melling
from Harry Potter.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, goodness. He was Dudley.
Dudley.
Douglas
Harry
Hedge,
Potter's cousin.
Leslie yes. Sharp. I'll stop there. Yes. I didn't get a chance to see this one. I had to earn a living. Was stuck working that night. So, guys, what did you both think of Pillion?
So, Joe, you missed a good one. Let's start by saying that.
I'm looking at the score here, 100% Rotten Tomatoes. When does that
happen? Is it 100%?
It's 100%.
So, this movie won't leave me alone. You know how you were saying about, Joe, the one is,
Die My Love.
Die My Love sticks with you. I can't stop thinking about this movie, Yazdi, since we watched it. I was, you know, there are a few times when we walk
I'm
out
I'm surprised because you're a prude.
I know. I am the prude of us, but there is something more. Okay, so it's hypersexual. It's almost like homoeroticism. But more than that, it is the unfolding of watching someone's humiliation on the big screen. And that makes that can be very uncomfortable, but intertwined with that, the main protagonist, what's his name? Sorry, I've forgotten his name.
Harry
Melling is incredible, right? Write this guy's Oscar nomination already. Because to play humiliation with this intense need to be accepted by the one that you have fallen in love with, to play that balance, it's absolutely stunning and painful to watch all at the same time. And then we can talk about all of the other stuff, Yazdi, but overall... I don't know that I love this movie, but I love this movie.
Yeah.
And I say that because it's such a difficult film to watch for many reasons.
Oh, okay.
But it hasn't left me. Yazdi, I'm dying to hear what you thought.
Yeah, I this movie will not leave me alone either. I've been thinking about it a long time. First of all, I should warn everybody, this is not for everyone.
Don't take grandma.
I don't even, you know, I think a lot of people are like, why am I seeing this on the screen? I don't want to watch this on the screen. I think it's going to shock a lot of people. I'm shocked this movie is playing in theaters. And I looked it up. Actually, what is in theaters is an unrated version, which makes sense to me. But, you know, I'm also not saying this movie is like super kinky. I think I've often said this. Watching a movie is often like walking a dog. And sometimes you let the dog walk you wherever it wants to go and you go along with it. And sometimes you fight the dog saying, no, I don't want to go there. I fought this movie the whole time I was watching it in my mind because I was like, this poor, sweet Colin does not deserve to be abused and humiliated. And I was seeing it from my own, from where I sit. And I kept kind of fighting it that a number of times in my head, I just said, walk away, leave. And then I realized that maybe the entire film is about a man coming to terms with the fact that he wants to be in a submissive relationship, which is what this is about.
Yeah.
And it's not fair for me to kind of put my own values and my own
projections
on him. Mm. But even outside of that, the movie is so fascinating. It's like this... I don't know anything about a dominant submissive relationship, and you get to see a lot of that up front. And
literally.
But there are little bits like the whole relationship of Colin with his parents is wonderful. The actor who plays his mom, she's wonderful. So there's so much here to recommend, but it's not for everyone.
Yeah, I think I think that the problem, the issue, I say I don't love it is... So we're watching a youngish, innocent man lose his virginity, lose himself, supposedly, to this older, very, very handsome man who seems to have it all, right? And I kind of was thinking to myself, how would I react if this was gender reversed, i.e. you had the older man with a younger woman? And that would change the whole movie, and you would feel like, gosh, I can't... But we would be outraged in some ways if this was... a movie about an older man and a younger woman. The fact that it's about an older man and a younger man, I think it's letting us into a world. I think it's opening a world that many of us don't get to see very often. So that was interesting. There's a lot of really interesting things here. I think in terms of movie craft, storytelling, it's good. It's good. It's got
it's
all
very
the
well
it's
made
very
movie.
Well directed. It's really well paced. It feels very real. I couldn't question much in it. All the characters are very believable, but it's a difficult topic to watch. And it's, again, for me, the most uncomfortable thing was watching someone's humiliation, because that's what the dominant person is doing to the submissive person.
I also think this... I'm thinking... Okay. One thing... two separate things I want to say. Well, many separate things I want to say. I warned you guys. The one thing I absolutely love about this movie is how it has a true understanding of the comic. This movie is very funny, I think.
Yes.
And, you know, this is a consistently funny movie from a director who knows about comic timing and reactions. Like outrageous things are happening. And just the reaction shots on people's faces are so perfectly done. I was like, ha-ha, laughing. And I laugh, you know.
I'm so glad you said that, because nothing you've said up to this point has led me to think that there is
smiles
in this movie.
Oh, it's very funny.
It's hyper-comical.
It's hyper-comical.
Yeah.
Because I've been listening here intently and thinking this is like...
It's not like a slapstick comedy. It's
smart funny.
It's smart funny,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
and
funny.
It's like
uncomfortable funny. I think the laughter is almost also at the times when you're most uncomfortable, and then they throw in a funny moment to kind of diffuse that uncomfortableness.
I also think it's also very deeply emotional.
Yes.
Like I haven't, you know, last time I talked about it was Nice Indian Boy. Which was the heart of that movie was his relationship with his parents. For me, the heart of this movie is Colin's relationship with his parents. And his mom It's that mom could have been such a cliche.
Yes.
She could have been such a cliche, but I think she just lifts the whole movie up. The other thing I also want to say is that, you know, the two leads here, they're asked to do and say things that are so extreme
yes.
that it would immediately defeat lesser actors.
Yes.
But both Stellan Skarsgård...
No, Alexander.
Sorry, both Alexander... Stellan Skarsgård. Both Alexander Skarsgård and particularly Harry Melling, they're so good that you may be shocked, you yes. may laugh nervously,
yes.
you may shake your head vigorously,
yes.
but you never not believe them.
Exactly.
Right? You never question... that what you're seeing is in the reality. And, you know, Melling is the heart of the movie, and his character doesn't once patronize the viewer, right? Even as we are rooting for him. So this movie never tries to be likable to anyone. It's really presenting very extreme stuff at you and saying, this is how it is, deal with it. And these two actors just make it sing. I really appreciated that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there are many ways to look at this movie, but I think it also speaks to how if somebody is kind of lost or is some way othered or some way not popular, then that makes that person very vulnerable to becoming part of a dangerous cult.
Or yes.
being abused by right. a group, yes. right? If you're seeking acceptance, you will seek acceptance from the worst thing. As long as any group welcomes you with open arms, you know, you will gladly go because nobody else has accepted you within their fray as one of their right. own. So I think the movie, maybe it's not the intention, but I was definitely thinking about inherently his personality made him very vulnerable to becoming part of a group that could potentially be yeah. very abusive. So... Yeah,
yeah. It's a strange movie to say you love because I don't know I love it, but I admire this movie because I haven't seen anything like this.
Yeah.
Although I was talking to my dear friend Melissa today.
Who watched it?
No, who no. watched the movie, and she was telling me, Yassi, that she told you about a movie called Sanctuary with Margot Qualley.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that similar?
No, I think this one is way more extreme.
Okay, but it's that same idea of, yeah, yeah. So, do you want to, should we sum this up?
Sure. Should I go ahead?
Yeah, please.
I give this an 8 out of 10 because quite literally there is nothing like this. I'm so glad that filmmakers are being so, how did this film get funded, right? How do you pitch this movie, you know,
yeah.
to anyone? That somebody is making something, and I'm so glad for Alexander Skarsgård and Harry Melling because I think even 10 years ago, any big name actor would be like, I don't want to touch this thing with a 10-foot pole. But
yeah.
they are so game.
No pun intended.
Yeah. And there's also, anyway, I can talk about this.
Yeah.
I can talk about this for a long time. But I also like that this movie kind of brings up issues about when does a relationship become abusive? And, you know, anyway, but I can go about this forever. So I just love that the movie is so fertile for all kinds of questioning and debate and dissection
yeah.
afterward. And the movie is very clear at different points in terms of how this Henry Melling character is feeling, like, and so forth. But so, yeah, I think if you're adventurous, if you like good cinema, if you really want to see something different, you know, people complain all the time, oh, it's the same old thing that we see in the cinema.
This is not the same old thing.
This is the total opposite of the same old thing. If you like adventurous,
yeah.
fun cinema,
yeah.
it's fun. It's
yeah.
fun. And I love the ending.
Yeah. And so the word pillion actually means, which Yazdi was telling me about, means the back passenger on
pillion
a motorbike.
Passenger.
Yeah,
on a bike.
Pillion
yeah.
passenger. Yeah, I didn't know that. I really was challenged by this movie and I wouldn't recommend it to everyone, but if you want to be challenged, again, don't take your kids, don't take grandma, but go watch this movie. It's really worth a watch. Alexander Skarsgård is incredible. And again, considering we just talked about him in The Moment, him playing this kind of goofball, you know, movie executive, here he's playing the dominant, you know, prosthetic,
maybe wearing.
Yeah, and I think Harry Melling, again, is so sweet in this
yeah.
movie. You want to protect him. And
yeah.
it's very hard to do that, you know, to to get the author, to get the audience's unquestioning sympathy.
Yeah.
But think of, as good as his acting is, and he I think he should be nominated for, at the end of the year, for how good his acting is. I think Skarsgård's role is not easy either. Because he, we will talk about it separately, because how his role plays out at the end, he has to do some pretty amazing stuff there.
Yeah, he has to do some pretty fine-tuning. 180 and, and 180,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, some good fine-tuning.
Yeah,
so.
So for me, it's also an 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm looking at the scores here. 100% review on Rotten Tomatoes from 134 reviews. Yeah. So it's universally positive.
Yeah,
and that never happens, by the way.
Yeah.
Like,
and it's not shaggy and it's not, you know, meditative. It's a very straightforward story, right? It's very well made.
And it's linear.
And it's linear, yeah. So I don't think people should worry, I won't understand what's going on. You may not recognize what's going on, but you will understand it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's I'm glad that this movie exists.
Moving along then, let's go to Wuthering Heights. I think Rashmi,
okay,
you're gonna
so
give
by
us a
now. There have been, I did ask my friendly friend chat, there have been, across in different languages, between 1920 and 2026, 17 feature films that kind of are in the Wuthering Heights, you know, based on Wuthering Heights, adaptations of Wuthering Heights. And in the English language alone, there have been 6 titles with the exact title Wuthering Heights. So, 2026, here we go. We have our Emerald Fennell version of Wuthering Heights. So, directed by Emerald Fennell, and of course, based on the book by Emily Bronte, and written, of course, adapted by Emerald Fennell. This stars Margot Robbie, Jacob Elordi, Hong Chau, and a few others. Martin Clunes popped up in this. So, Martin Clunes, Joe, was a very funny actor, very famous in the 1980s, 90s in the
Men
UK.
Men Behaving Badly.
Men Behaving Badly, yes.
Yeah. Comedy
so
show that he used
wrote,
to headline.
Produced, yeah, yeah. Mm. Not your grandmother's Wuthering Heights, but is this one worth watching? There's been a lot of controversy about Margot Robbie being cast as Kathy. And
we should say, I mean, let's talk about Emerald Fennell a little because
yes.
I think,
sure.
You know, her. She wrote Promising Young Woman from a few years ago, and then she followed that up with Saltburn.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Two movies that I had very different responses to. Promising Young Woman was excellent, if a little rough around the edges, I think, in terms of its believability and storytelling and tone. Saltburn was completely unwatchable by me. I found...
I love
by
it.
Many, yeah.
No, I know, people like right. Saltburn, but I was not in that fan club at all. It was a very annoying, frustrating, overly written movie.
Yeah, and Jacob Elordi was in that one, so I think he's quite the muse for her.
Yeah, and so, she said that she wrote it with him in mind.
Okay, so he is her brooding Heathcliff.
Yes.
Joe, you are, I think, yes, you've read the original
in
novel.
School,
I've read the original
like
novel in
long
school.
Time
Joe,
ago.
You hadn't read the novel.
I have
so
not
you're kind
read,
of going into this blind.
I have not read Wuthering Heights, and I'm questioning my own sanity at this point, and trying to remember whether or not I've seen a prior adaptation of the story, given that there are so many, and I feel like I have. But this was not a story I recognized.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, so much so that when we left the cinema, I bent one of our cardinal movie wallahs rules, which is don't discuss the movie until the podcast, and asked Rashmi the simple question, and all I was looking for was a yes or no answer was this true to the original story?
And I
to
said,
which I had, to which I received an emphatic
no.
No. So that answers maybe some of the questions that people wanting to watch this movie have, which is this a faithful adaptation? As someone who doesn't know the story, and I'm hoping one of you will talk to this, this seems to take a very artistic, large dose of artistic license to adapt the story. Here's what I'll say about my reception to the movie. Look, I mean, coming into it, I think I came in with fairly naive eyes because I didn't really understand where the story was going to go. I'll say that I did find it provocative, very sexy, and very engaging. It frustrated me at times because I didn't believe the turns that the characters took. I don't think they were earned by what we had scenes thus far in the script, but again, being an adaptation, I thought, well, maybe I'm just missing the point of it. I think the one thing I just can't get past, and we'll have to move on to that, is just how much Jacob Elordi licks Margot Robbie face. On the face.
Like, there's a lot of licking.
There's a lot of face licking. Like, yeah. And every time it happened, I was completely like, stop licking the woman's nose. Like, it's I know it's supposed to be like hypersexual, heated, and romantic. But the nose licking, the quantity of nose licking was so. I don't think that was supposed to be my reaction.
Her ears and her cheeks and her forehead. It was full face licking.
So with that said. I'll stop there and we'll talk some more.
Yes, D.
So I'm really torn about it because on the one hand, I will be a lifelong apologist for Emerald Fennell. I just love everything she does. Yeah. I loved Amazing, Promising Young Woman. I loved Saltburn. I think she's not a minimalist director.
And she wrote filmmaker. Killing Eve, right?
She was she wrote many episodes. Co-writer, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So she always wants to kind of jab a finger into your eye. And this movie, too, is so maximalist, right? Everything about this movie is larger than life. You won't find a shred of subtlety in this whole movie. I love the way it opens. Right, it opens with this with this man who is getting hanged, and he has, and everybody else is like writhing and
section. Don't
spoil that scene.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I love that she's incapable of making a boring movie. So I will always defend her for that. This is not a boring movie.
No,
I will also defend the fact that she is a stylist above anything else, and this movie has style to spare. You could put it on 100 pieces of toast and keep layering it all, and the style won't run out. Does that style work for me? Some of the style was horrific and gaudy to me, but I cannot deny that it's stylish. So that's what I like about the movie. What I don't like about the movie, and I think overall I came away disappointed with the movie, is based on what you said, Joe, which is that, why do you take up Wuthering Heights? Wuthering Heights is a very unwieldy, wretched, loaded piece of literature. It has different unreliable narrators. There are three generations. These characters are inherently horrible characters, Heathcliff and Catherine. And I think if you are going to bring him on the screen, then you need a very adept writer and a very adept director who is going to make you empathize with them in spite of their self-destructive actions. And I think this movie fails to do that. By the time it came to an end, I was like, they deserve all the misery that's come to them because they've been behaving so badly. And I don't blame Emily Bronte for that. I blame Emerald Fennell for that because she failed to kind of bring these characters above archetypes of swooning people who cannot, you know, who are too stupid to kind of, you know, head towards each other. There's a few other things about the movie too, but we'll come back.
Yeah,
Rashmi, what did you think?
I like the movie at times, but it really crosses over into Hallmark territory for me. It's too melodramatic. I think it's okay to say that Emerald Fennell took inspiration from Wuthering Heights, but it kind of stops there. The story is so different. She's got rid of some characters. She's joined some characters. She has completely disregarded the second half of the book, which most adaptations do, because it's a difficult book, right? It's two-part. It's generational, as Yazdi said. And I just think it's too smoldering. The whole point of Wuthering Heights is it's kind of like a revenge story. And I didn't get that. I just got unrequited love. And there's nothing wrong with having a movie about unrequited love. We just talked about that in some ways with the movie Pillion. But it didn't go anywhere. It's got oozes of style. I think the cinematography is absolutely beautiful.
And the production design, yeah.
Yeah, the production is great. But again, it's anachronistic, right?
You've got this
fantastic house, which has like hands, this hand sculpture.
It's supposed to be the library, but it has this fireplace, which is entirely made of white marble hands, like 600 hands.
So I think it's got more
style. The production design.
Yeah, I think it's got more style than content. And again, I didn't buy, I couldn't buy the love story between Heathcliff and Kathy. It just, it. I mean, and Margot Robbie's great. She does a, I think she does a really good job of being a hateful kind of, you know, tumultuous, childlike, stomping the ground Kathy, who can't control herself, and that was Kathy. But it could have been, should have been better. Should have been better.
I mean, neither of you have mentioned something that I really, really loved about the movie, which was the young Heathcliff and the young Kathy.
Yeah, they were great. Sure.
They, those two actors, those two young actors, and I should look up their names.
Charlotte Millington and Owen Cooper from Adolescence.
Yeah, from Adolescence.
That's right. Yeah. That's where I saw. They're exceptional.
Exceptional.
Actors,
exceptional.
Doing exceptional things. Correct. For their age. And because the movie began with them, I think, you know, they completely captivated me, including my heart. Like, they were the ones, and their lines were the ones that resonated to me.
Sure.
Once we got to the adult Heathcliff and Catherine, even though Elodie and Robbie do a good job of trying to convey that romance, that passion, that love, I think Robbie in particular had a hard time doing this version of Catherine because... She was forced to overplay it.
Yeah.
And I believe she was forced to. Maybe this was her take on the script, right? So I'm giving Emerald Fennell too much, credit for Mark Robert's performance. But I feel like she was forced to overplay it because, even the words chosen felt a little OTT. And again. So it became hard to buy, and then the movie moves into darker territory, and I just like you that for me this movie would have worked if I had fallen in love with the Robbie character, the Catherine character, to the extent that Elodie was supposed to. Right, when we watch Up, the little montage that we have of the wife Ellie, we fall in love with her first, then they take her away. Right, and it's our love for Ellie that helps us understand what that character is going through in that beautiful montage from the Pixar movie Up. You know, this, and that's just a succinct way of me trying to say, we need to feel some of Elodie's passion for his love, and I'm like, I don't like this woman, and I know
no one's likable.
You know the literature better than I do here, but. Then all of the things that he does are supposed to stem from that, and I didn't buy it. And so it unravels.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I think Jacob Elordi is a fine, fine, fine actor, way ahead of his
time. One of my favorite performances last year was his rendering
Frankenstein,
of
Frankenstein.
And he did Elvis, which is like, I would never as an actor touch Elvis. But so he's a fine, fine actor, don't get me wrong. I think he's just very young for this role.
Same.
Because Heathcliff...
Or Margot Robbie's too old.
Or Margot Robbie's too old.
Right, so it's
yeah, there's a difference because the whole point of Heathcliff is Heathcliff is a person who was an other. He was an other in every sense. The second page of Wuthering Heights say that he was a dark-skinned gypsy boy, right? And what do? You hire a white 20-some-year-old actor to play this, for one thing, right? So the whole commentary about race is gone. From this adaptation.
Although this is a race-blind casting.
It's a Bridgerton casting.
Yeah, it's a Bridgerton casting, sure.
But so that's one thing. But the whole thing about Heathcliff is that he feels that Catherine has shunned him and he goes and makes a life of his own and comes back into her life to taunt her. I didn't buy that with Elodie at all. And I think he needs to be... a little bit menacing. He needs to be a little suspicious in terms of his intent. He needs to be deeply, deeply brooding. And I didn't see any of those in this. And maybe the fault is mine for putting my expectation on Emerald Fennell's vision. But I just didn't.
I think the whole felt overboiled.
It's overboiled. It's very overwrought.
Yeah, yeah.
And that can be fun and indulgent, and I think that's what she was going for here with the production design and the...
Yeah, you know. And I think it could be a nice brooding version for younger, you know, older teenagers, young 20-somethings to watch and hopefully get hooked onto fiction. That would be a great, that would be a great thing, right? For them to actually open the book, but when they open the book, they'll get shocked at how different it really is. Mm. And, you know...
I'm not sure this would inspire anyone to do that, though.
No, that's my fear. That's my fear. It looks more like a, like it looks like more like a pop video. It looks like more like pop video style than.
Oh, and we haven't even mentioned Charlie XCX did all the songs. Yeah, there's like a full song. There's at least two
wasted,
or three songs.
Which seems wasted to me.
I mean, it didn't seem. The song seems appropriate to that time.
Yeah.
It's not.
I really like the song.
Yeah,
by the way.
And there's a lot of. Again, it's hyper-sexualized, right? Like, there's a lot of sounds and...
Yes.
Like,
and the scene in the barn.
What scene?
Well, the eggs.
The scene in the barn. Oh,
the slug.
The farmhand.
Like the snail.
So that's very Emerald Fennell, right?
Yeah.
She's obsessed with bodily fluids, right?
She is.
Every movie of hers.
Yeah.
That whole thing with the aspic that she puts a finger in with the fish... Right, the whole thing with eggs, how they're
squishing raw eggs,
which is fine. Apart from then, we linger for like 60 seconds on somebody picking up the eggs and letting them run through their fingers. And
I think one of you said she wants to poke you in the eye, but she's not brave enough to go there. And
no, I think she's brave, but she's off target.
Yes. Maybe. When you think about Pillian, Yasti, and we looked, which is also hypersexualized, it landed so well on Pillian.
Well, I mean, I would have thought that, you know, Wuthering Heights is such a intense, dense, extreme piece of literature. Emerald Fennell likes to do maximalist, extreme stuff. I would have thought it would be a good match, but it's not. It's surprising.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it looks like $1 million.
Yeah.
I'll start by I give it a 6.5 out of 10. I mean, if you want to see Margot Robbie has one of the prettiest faces right now in contemporary cinema, and you see close-ups of her face all the time.
Yeah, it's very close up.
But like you, Joe, I could not shake off the feeling that she's trying to get her hands around this role and just not getting her two fingers to meet. Like she's grasping at it and working very hard. But if you want to see, like, you know, Margot Robbie walked through diaphanous, you know, whales. She walks through a lot of whales all the time. Her gowns are absurd. And the color red, they're obsessed with the color red. Like, there is, like, red gushing through everywhere. So I think as if you're a visualist, then this movie, you should see it on the big screen. But I think if you really want something resembling a full plot or, you know, characters you can kind of... you know, that your bosom is going to heave along with theirs, then this is not the movie. So, yeah, 6 out of 10.
Joe?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's made with passion and confidence, but it's also made with Emerald Fennell's acerbic pen. Mm. And I think it's engaging. And, you know, as I said, as I came out of the movie, this, you know, my immediate reaction was, this isn't a movie that I won't tell people to see. I think people should see this movie. Like, see this movie. It's worth your while, even though I don't think it's a great movie. So, you know, I'm struggling between 6 and 7. I'm going to lean towards a 7 because having whipped it for the entire duration of this review, I have to say that I think I'm really glad I watched it. It was a worthy watch, and it didn't quite give me the emotional payoff that I was expecting, and I was building. I was like, great. I'm going to get the end. I'm going to get the tears. I'm going to get the payoff for all of this journey. And it didn't quite land for me. But it's bold. It's memorable. And, you know, I'm overall glad I saw it. So 7.
I'm glad I saw it. It will completely evaporate from my brain. I hope Emerald Fennell gets her act together and gives us something as good as Promising Young Woman again. And really finds herself. I think she's kind of almost doing the, you know, we've been talking about all of these directors who have been so self-indulgent. I think it's worth a watch in the cinema. I think the cinematography is good, but it's not Wuthering Heights. So for me, it's Yeah, I would say a low 6 out of 10.
Yeah.
I mean, you shouldn't let the style do all the talking. Right?
That's yeah, you need style and content.
You need
yeah.
a little bit of content. And I think in other iterations that she's worked on, the plot was heavy enough, but she's taken at this Wuthering Heights and kind of made sculpted some version of her own, which I think she should have spent a little bit more time compared to the style, which is just off the charts. The style is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't even talk about...
There's one other thing I want to talk about.
What's her name? Cho.
Oliver. Hong Chao.
I mean, she plays Nellie, and Nellie is such a pivotal role in this movie.
Which it's not in the book at all. Which is her adaptation, but that's fine. I did want to talk about Alison Oliver, who plays Isabel in this movie.
Yeah, she was funny. She was funny.
The movie...
Yeah.
I want to be in the movie that she was in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? So she is playing... Like, everything she says and does in the movie gets a huge laugh from the audience.
Yes.
Entire movie should have been like that. Right?
It felt like she's the only one that gets it.
She was the only one who got it.
Good point.
Right.
Really good
right.
point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to psychoanalyze Emerald Fennell now because I think she achieved a lot of success at a very young age for her work in film. You know, her writing.
Yeah.
And then her directing. And I think... She's not as brilliant as she thinks she is. And I think as soon as she realizes that, she'll do better work.
Agree.
Because I think the foibles of this movie come from overconfidence in the writing and overconfidence in the directing. She's kind of clipping, right? The signal to noise ratio is off in her work. So she's kind of banging up against the ceiling. So if she dialed it back a bit, we'd see more detail. We'd see more texture in her work.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's all there, but it doesn't quite hang. And I think when she was a little less confident and she wrote Promising Young Woman, we got something braver and bolder.
And smarter.
Here she's just like, I'm just going to go nuts with the production design and the characters and the dialogue and the sex and the, you know. So I think she just dial it down, Emerald. You know, there's greatness here that
it's almost like a try too hard.
That's a very succinct way of saying exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But even then, I don't think the movie is as transgressive as she thinks it is.
Exactly.
No, that's
it's
my
not.
Point.
It's not.
Right? I mean, sure, people snog forever, but it's not really, you know, crossing any lines or, you know.
Right.
It's shocking for the sake of being shocking, which isn't really shocking because we just saw worse in Pillion. And again, I hate to keep bringing up Pillion, but it's also got the scene in the barn literally happened in Pillion, but they did it much, much better.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, okay, these are probably two good movies to watch back to back. And then you'll have to go and shower.
But you should watch this.
Agree.
I'm not saying don't watch it. I'm just saying really temper your expectations of what you're going to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's enough talking.
Yeah. I think those definitely were two movies we're dying to chat about.
For sure.
So it's been a good start to the year, I think.
It
overall.
Has. We've been smacked in the mouth.
Pillion is oddly timed, right?
It came at the end of the year in the UK.
So it was a late release.
It's up for the BAFTAs.
Yeah, it's been nominated.
He's been nominated.
Yeah, for the BAFTAs.
It's too bad it may have missed out on better recognition.
I wish it had come here last year. No, actually, it might be good timing for the US.
Yeah. I'm afraid
it'll get washed out.
Yeah.
And it'll turn off a lot of people.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And maybe that's what led to the decision.
But I can't wait to see what's his name? Harry Lytton, whoever.
Yeah,
the director.
Melling, Harry. Oh, the director.
Well,
Yeah.
Harry Melling for sure, but even the director.
Yeah.
The director looks like he's like 31 years old. He's like really young.
It's very specific, yes. He looks like he's 31.
Well,
not 30 like, or like
32 or
35,
what, in his early 30s.
31.
He looks younger than his actors, which is pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
Okay. Enough for today. Thank you again for listening. We do appreciate every single one of you out there that takes the time to download our little podcast and watch our little YouTubes. So thank you. We will be back again very soon. The year is off to a great start.
Yeah.
looking forward to a lot of stuff. The Super Bowl announcement of the new Spielberg movie was really exciting.
And a second part of the... I heard Quentin Tarantino has given the script for the character of Brad Pitt from Hollywood, the Hollywood
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Upon
yeah, so that's actually... But someone else is directing because he's still waiting to do his number 10 movie.
Quentin, just make movies. We want you to make movies, okay? Yes. You need to get past the lore, right? Nobody cares if you make 10 or 15. Just make movies. You're good at it. Damn it.
And then a new movie by God will be made this year, so Christopher Nolan.
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah, looking forward to the rest of this year. Thank you again for listening. We'll be back soon. Until then, too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.